Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 21st of September. This hour of the program, as you know, the International Olympic Committee is going to announce the host city for the 2016 Summer Olympic Games on October 2nd. Michelle Obama is making a dramatic presentation when she offers the closing argument for the bid by her hometown of Chicago to win the 2016 Summer Olympics. Our guest this hour will be answering the question about, well, it's the major question concerning this. The prevailing perception is that a properly run Olympics generates billions of dollars in profit. Is this an accurate perception? And considering the under-the-table bribes that were made in previous Olympics to secure the event for a host city, have those completely been done away with? Is there a better way to award the prize of the Olympics, if we can call it a prize, to a city? We'll be talking about all of this this hour of the program. Our guests have written a very interesting paper on this very subject. Victor Matheson is associate professor in the Department of Economics in the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Professor Matheson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And also joining us is Professor Robert Boddy. He is a professor of economics and chair of the Department of Economics and Business at Lake Forest College, which is located in Illinois, as you know. Professor Boddy, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So you asked the question in your paper, we have this prevailing thought, if you got the Olympics, you got billions of dollars in profit. Is this an accurate perception, gentlemen, whoever wants to start?
Victor, do you want me to go or you?
All yours.
Well, I think that it's an exaggeration, and there are reasons for that. Generally speaking, when you look at the Olympic Games, it does require something in the way of extensive subsidy. And so if you're going to subsidize an event such as this, it is necessary to garner political support and to get the political support that you need. You can use economics as an argument for why it is that we should have the game. So the economics has become a kind of political expedient. So if we argue that the money that we spend will return a multiple of whatever it is that we spend, we no longer think of it as an expenditure, but rather think of it as an investment. And so Victor and I, in the papers that we've written, have argued that it's unlikely that it's an investment. I think it should be thought of as an expenditure, and that the Olympics and other hallmark events rarely return what it is that we put into them in the way of a public subsidy.
Mm-hmm. Victor, you want to respond?
Well, of course, I agree with Rob on this, but what happens is if you actually go back and look at cities that have hosted these big events, if you look at cities that have hosted the Super Bowl and World Series and Olympics and World Cup, if these events really have a large impact on local economies, you would think they would show up in things like tax receipts and employment numbers and income numbers and even visitor arrivals to the city. Mm. And just time after time, we look at these hallmark events, and indeed, they don't seem to show up in any sort of real economic variables anywhere.
Why does Chicago want this?
Well, I think that for Chicago and for any city, I think the hosting an event like this, I think really says something about a city's vitality and a city's standing in the world. So cities, like individuals, I think have egos, and I think that it is a feather in your cap to have an event like this. Of course, there are, I think, vested economic interests in a community that really do have something to gain, even if the community overall doesn't gain economically speaking. Certainly, there are sectors of the economy that would benefit. So the banking sector, the construction sector, all stand to gain something. But as Victor noted, when you look at overall economic performance variables, and if you were to compare, let's say, a large urban center before and after a hallmark event, we see very, very little in the way of a change in economic activity. In fact, in some cases, it might even be negative for reasons that we might want to discuss. But by and large, Hallmark events seem to be pretty benign in terms of what they do for a city's economy. But Chicago, I think the one possibility here is that Chicago would like to change its image. If you think about Chicago, and when I go around, and I'm sure this is true for Victor as well, when we speak, the image of Chicago is still that of Gangsterstadt. We still think of Al Capone, and we still think of Chicago as a kind of haven for criminals. And so Chicago would love to change that perception. And if you look at international visitors to Chicago each year, it numbers a little bit over a million. And if you were to compare that to, let's say, New York or Paris or London, New York probably gets more than 9 million international visitors a year, and London and Paris are at the top of the list with over 10 million visitors. So I think Chicago's thinking that if it can improve its image and put on a wonderful show, these alien spendthrifts that descend on the city for the fortnight of games will come back. And so they're hoping for something in the way of an economic legacy, but past experience would argue that's not likely to occur.
Mayor Daley has said in the next 5-6 years, tell me one other thing that can bring jobs and economic opportunities, and besides that guarantee an investment by the federal government of billions of dollars in infrastructure. If you have something better, he said, I'd love to see it.
Well, you know, with regard to infrastructure, first of all, it's clearly the case that when you study the history of federal support of the Olympics in this country, the federal government has been playing an increasingly smaller role, not a larger role. And so, and in particular, I think that would be true because so much in the way of federal spending would probably be devoted to security. And the security budget has a way of getting out of hand for things like this. In Athens, for example, we started with a budget of $400 million, and most of us stopped counting when the security budget exceeded, or the security expenditure exceeded, $1.5 billion. And so I think that the federal government might be involved in that way, and it might be that they'll speed up what it is that they're going to contribute to transportation infrastructure. But I don't think there will be a net increase in what it is that the federal government will spend in Chicago on transportation as a consequence of the games, and I think that most of the spending undertaken by the federal government would be in the realm of security. So, no, I don't see the federal government spending a whole lot of money on the games, as has been the tradition in the U.S. The federal government spends less than what it is that we see elsewhere in the world, in the U.S., than what it is that we see elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the plight of the taxpayers of Chicago in all of this?
Well, so that's obviously at the forefront. If you look at some past Olympic hosts like Montreal, Montreal's taxpayers were paying for their 1976 Olympics right up until just 2 years ago. They made their final payment on their event. Their great Olympic stadium that they built had already lost its baseball tenant, and they were still making the last payments of it. It's kind of like your car that you've already sold off to the dealer, and you still have payments on it. And that was certainly the state that happened there. Massive increases in federal and local government debt in Athens following their 2004 games.
What about Atlanta?
Atlanta, so there's a good example there. Atlanta had at least partially a private games. Most of that money came from some sort of private sources, although there were large public contributions there as well. Atlanta was banking on changing its reputation of the world and being again, one of the great leading cities in the world. And certainly for 3 weeks, the intention of everyone was on that city. But I don't think anyone left Atlanta with the impression that, yeah, this is a place we want to come back again and again and again. I don't think anyone is talking about Atlanta in the same light as London, Paris, and New York.
And one of the things with regard to the U.S. games is they've often been viewed in the rest of the world as commercial games, that games that have been largely privately orchestrated And if you have a private vision for the games, it's likely that you're not going to engage in the kind of public planning and public strategizing that really might help a city move forward. When you look at where the Olympic Games have had something in the way of an impact and maybe something in the way of a legacy, it's not from the games themselves. It's not from building venues to accommodate the actual events. It's really from the infrastructure that's built. And if you can create political coalitions that will help push through infrastructure improvements, it may be that you can improve the city in a way that will help create something in the way of an economic legacy. Mm-hmm. Barcelona is a city that's often mentioned as a city that really developed a strategic plan that really changed the city in a way that allowed for an economic legacy. But even in the case of Barcelona, you find that the European Union was probably a much more important determinant, and their membership in it a far more important determinant of the increase in economic activity than the Olympic Games were. You could compare Barcelona's growth rate, for example, for that of, let's say, Dublin. And there's not much difference. Dublin didn't host the Olympic Games, but again, I think belonging to the European Union and with all of its initiatives was much more responsible for explaining the growth that we experience in certain EU cities following the Barcelona Games and not necessarily the Barcelona Games. But a city is in a kind of conundrum when they host an event like this. If they really want to engage in what is a high, high risk activity, and if they're really hell-bent on getting the games, then what they really need to think about is what they're going to do in the way of economic infrastructure improvements, not what it is that the games will do for a community, because there's very little synergy between what it is that you create in the way of actual Olympic infrastructure, meaning the venues and even the athletes' village, and what it is that we experience in the way of growth and economic activity.
Yeah, and Beijing shows a great example of that. So they, of course, have the spectacular bird's nest. We all remember that.
Yeah.
And the water cube, without question, the most advanced and the most beautiful water swimming facility that the world has ever seen. Neither of those two venues has hosted any events since the Olympics have gone out of town. So here you have a situation where you spent millions of dollars building fantastic facilities for the games themselves that have very little to do with any sort of long-run growth expectations for the city.
So everybody in Beijing doesn't have swimming classes or start their day swimming now? They're still doing Tai Chi?
Well, it's just that whether, even if they are swimming, it's hard to figure out exactly how you use a
right.
world-class Olympic swimming facility for sports and recreation.
Yeah, exactly. What about Michelle Obama trying to seal the deal for Chicago? This is a pretty big deal for her to be there. I was reading an article a couple weeks ago, Valerie Jarrett commenting, there will not be a dry eye in the room when she gives the closing argument for Chicago.
Well, that's stirring, and I think that both Barack and Michelle, of course, they present themselves so wonderfully, and they're great representatives of the city, and I think that, in fact, they really do give a boost to Chicago's prospects.
Sure.
And so, but still, I mean, Victor and I are these dispassionate, dismal scientists who have to really figure out what it's going to do economically. And despite the theatrics, and I'm sure Michelle will put on a wonderful show, and Barack may even go, and I'm sure he would put on a wonderful show. But when all is said and done, what we have to do is think about whether this is really good for a city and whether it's worth what it is that we dedicate to the event in the way of resources. And the evidence is just overwhelmingly against the idea that this is a panacea for whatever economic ills a city might have, or is going to provide a meaningful boost to a city's economy.
Yeah, or is going to boost Al Capone out of our image of what Chicago is.
Right? Well, you know, that's one thing, though, that I would say that Chicago, maybe as much as any city I've seen in recent times, has the potential to be what we call a surprise city. Maybe people have this outdated image of what Chicago is, and maybe they would find something different. But again, it's such a risky strategy. The chances are so against that. And when Victor and I look at the Olympics and city after city after city, that kind of repeat visit that will increase net spending just doesn't seem to materialize. Yeah. And so, again, it's a high-risk strategy, but if Chicago's going to do it or if any city's going to do it, then they probably should be advised to develop a comprehensive plan that will, in fact, enable something in the way of a boost in economic activity. You're very, very unlikely to get it from simply people visiting the city and deciding that this is such a great place, we're going to return year after year after year.
Now, in hopes of not being always the dismal scientist, it is important to realize that there are other reasons to host an event like this besides just the direct economic benefits. You know, this would be a very exciting event for the city. I mean, it'll create a disaster in terms of parking and traffic and all these things for 3 weeks, but it really is a very exciting event for the city. And, for example, when Germany hosted the World Cup for soccer in 2006, all of the studies that came out of Germany after the fact, again, confirmed the usual sort of guesses that it didn't make the Germans any richer. But it, in fact, if you looked at happiness of people, as well as you can measure that, it appears that the Germans were quite a bit happier after the event took place than before. So I don't think we'd have any objections to Chicago throwing a big party and saying, yes, we know we're going to spend money on this party. And there's no reason to believe that the Olympics might not make Chicago very happy. But again, it's very unlikely it's going to make Chicago rich.
That's funny.
He does have a sense of humor, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Let's welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just one moment. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. So is perhaps a temporary happiness worth all of the expenditure? We're talking about Chicago, and this would have, you know, ramifications for the state of Wisconsin, too, because from what I've been hearing, there would be some events that would happen in the state of Wisconsin, perhaps biking events in Madison, et cetera. So we would be involved in this in some way. What do you think? Is it worthwhile economically or to get rid of a crime image that perhaps Chicago has had? Chicago is a pretty sophisticated city now. So it had Al Capone. So other cities have got gangsters, too. We're talking about the economic impact, and our guests have studied the games being held in different parts of the world to see if there is any kind of benefit, and what do they find? People may be happier that they have hosted, but there hasn't been much of an economic impact at all. So here's our number. What do you think? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Our guests are Professor Victor Matheson with the Associate Professor, Department of Economics at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Professor Robert Boddy is Professor of Economics and Chair of the Department of Economics and Business at Lake Forest College. So we'll be with you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, and let's start with Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I wondered if I could encourage your guests to be somewhat more specific, and I could cite a few examples of why. They compared the Barcelona games, Barcelona versus Dublin, and I think as recently as a couple of years ago, Ireland and possibly Dublin were rated as one of the best places in the world to live. So that, you know, that's maybe not such a bad thing. We used to have a company here in Madison called Rayovac, and we still do to some extent, but, you know, their company Spectrum relocated to Atlanta after the Olympic Games. I just wonder if, and, you know, certainly I'm not disputing the fact that there was a $1.5 billion security budget at Athens. But having been to Athens before the Games, I know that the airport was located very far from the city, and there was basically no road infrastructure to get there. So they would have had to have an immense public expenditure to make anything practical there. And I just wonder if having the Olympics wouldn't be a way to get something done that wouldn't be done otherwise. Like, what are the airport numbers for Atlanta? Could we build a regional transit in the Chicago area that might include Wisconsin as a result of the Olympics?
If I could address your listener's question, because it's a very good one, and in fact he's hitting the notes that I was sounding a little bit earlier, and that is, and when you consider Athens, the real benefit of the Games had to do with what it is that Athens created in the way of infrastructure. Prior to the Games, Athens had a downtown airport, which was completely inadequate for a city of Athens' stature. And so as a consequence of the Games, as I noted earlier, we were able to develop the kind of political coalitions necessary to create a new airport and to create light rail and public transportation, widen roads. There were all kinds of things that were done in Athens as a consequence of the Games that really allowed, I think, for improvements in the Athens economy. And that's exactly the point. You're not going to get much in the way of an economic boost from the Games themselves unless you use the Games as a way of bringing diverse political groups together and rally around a particular event and push through the kind of funding you need for infrastructure improvements. But in the case of Chicago, and this is true of other cities that have hosted the Olympics in the United States, because they are privately orchestrated, there isn't that kind of planning. There isn't that kind of comprehensive economic thinking necessary, I think, to create the kind of infrastructure that would allow for economic improvements. And so Chicago has a very modest budget for the Games relative to what it is that we saw in Athens, where the final figure approached $20 billion. Chicago is talking about a little bit more than $5 billion for the Games, which is small in comparison to what it is that we've seen in the past. Atlanta, similarly, had a small budget, and Los Angeles had hardly any budget at all, and that's because Los Angeles was in a unique position. It was the only city bidding for the Games back in 1984 for a variety of reasons. And so the competition that does exist among cities for a hallmark event like the Olympic Games is such that cities typically do spend a lot on them. But Chicago's budget is modest, and the transportation improvements that have been scheduled to occur in conjunction with the Games are relatively small compared to the infrastructure improvements that we see elsewhere. And in fact, in the case of Atlanta, there were transportation snafus right from the get-go. And so I think that you can create you have the potential not only for creating a positive image, which will encourage tourism over and above what you experienced prior to the Games, but if people have a negative experience when they come, the opposite could occur. So I quite agree with your listener that in the case of cities like Athens, it's the infrastructure that was enabled as a consequence of bringing political groups together to get a lot of this stuff done. That's not happening in the case of Chicago, and it does not typically happen in American cities.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. My husband has attended a lot of the Olympics, and he was telling me a story last night about Atlanta needing bus drivers for the Olympics, so they advertised and brought people into the city from elsewhere and then hadn't figured out where they ought to stay. So They had a big place, you know, with cots on the floor, and the people who were brought in said, I don't think so, we're leaving, and it created transportation snafus. I wanted to ask you more, though. I was interested in your your L.A. work here, but I never knew why. Was L.A. the only city bidding on the 84 Olympics?
Well, a variety of reasons of that. We already alluded to the financial disaster that happened in Montreal. In 1976. They had the Israeli athlete tragedy in 1972 in Munich. Then the boycott of the games in Moscow in 1980. So all of a sudden you have an Olympics that really is perceived as having huge risks associated with it. As a matter of fact, big enough that in 1976 for the Winter Olympics, Denver was actually awarded the Olympics and gave them back because they simply said, no, this is just going to get out of hand here. Too many costs, too many risks. No, thank you. I want to wash my hands of that.
Oh, my.
So what happened in 1984 is L.A. ends up being the only bidder, and they tell the Olympic Committee, as they're in the driver's seat now, and says, well, we're going to use all the old facilities we used back in the 20s when we hosted the Olympics before. We're going to use a 75-year-old Rose Bowl. We're going to use a 75-year-old L.A. Coliseum. And if you do that and you keep your costs way down, indeed you can have a highly profitable Games. Well, everyone sees the profit coming out of L.A. and says, well, look how much money you can make on the Games, and so everyone gets back into the bidding. But, of course, now the IOC is in the driver's seat instead of the sole city like L.A.
Right. Well, let's talk a few moments before we go back to phone calls about the IOC. Has all the corruption been cleared up?
Well, I think that, first of all, just from a purely economics perspective, the IOC functions as an unregulated monopoly. And so the IOC really encourages bidding among cities. In fact, when Victor noted the experience of L.A. in 1984, the IOC was actually trying to get other cities to get into the bidding a year before the games were held because they realized that they were in a position where, as Victor said, they couldn't call the shots. L.A. was really calling the financial shots. And so that was an uncomfortable position for the IOC. And Victor's quite right to note that the profitability of the games in 1984 encouraged a renewed interest among cities in the games. But cities weren't thinking about what it was that Los Angeles didn't have to spend relative to what it is that they would have to spend when they were in competition with other well-heeled suitor cities for the games. And so I think that things have changed dramatically since 1984. And when you take a look at who's bidding for the 2016 games, the competition is keen. And so even though Chicago's got has got great resources, so does Madrid, and so does Tokyo, and so does Rio. I mean, Rio's really making a push for the game. So that kind of competition means there might be what we call a winner's curse, which is what it is that cities bid for the games in order to secure them. Might be in excess of what it is that they can reasonably expect in the way of an economic return from them.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Richard from Nina. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Just a couple quick little comments. To me, the motivation for a lot of these big events, such as the Olympics, is not that it helps the population or a city in general, but that there are a lot of individuals who stand to make a tremendous amount of money on it. So whether you're in the concrete business or the advertising business or whatever it happens to be, you're strongly motivated to bring a big event to town, and you don't particularly care whether it inconveniences or costs the city or the federal government a whole bunch of money.
Well, I can answer that. That's exactly right, and that's, of course, one of the general problems with the political system, that special interests tend to have a disproportionate amount of influence. For example, when we look back at the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City, and we looked at all the different sectors of the economy, and we found, yeah, indeed, the hotel sector, of course, did great during that quarter, and the restaurant industry did fantastic, but the rest of the economy really suffered because people's attention were distracted away from things like regular department stores and the rest of the economy. So you had a lot of people in Salt Lake City losing a little bit, but a few people gaining a lot. And the political economy there is that a small number of people making a lot can often outvote a lot of people losing a little bit because they're, again, strongly motivated.
And Richard's question is interesting because in addition to, as Victor noted, talking about people who really gain quite a bit. When the federal government decides to get into subsidizing events like this, it has to be aware of the fact that, let's say, by augmenting Chicago's bid, it might be hurting cities elsewhere in the Midwest. It may be that people from Milwaukee, for example, will decide to go to Chicago to view some events. And if they go to Chicago, well, Milwaukee may lose out as a consequence. In fact, in the case of Australia, when Sydney held the games, Brisbane and Melbourne were losers. And so it brings up the question to what extent, and I think federal governments are aware of this, should the federal government be involved in subsidizing activities that promise to maybe enrich certain sectors in the host city, but really coming at the expense of other cities and sectors, maybe even within the city. And so this idea of trade-offs is not new to economists, and the trade-offs can be very local, but certainly the trade-offs do occur on a regional and national basis as well.
There's also political capital to be made here, of course. If we look at the 2002 Winter Olympics, that was the springboard for Mitt Romney, person who very well may be the Republican nominee for president. You know, why would someone want to bring the Olympics into the city? Well, this gives me kind of the springboard onto the national scene. And, of course, that's exactly what Mitt Romney did, parlayed his success in the Olympics in 2002. Onto the Massachusetts governorship, and then, of course, onto a unsuccessful run for president last year.
Hmm. So Mayor Daley is going somewhere, or what?
Oh, I don't want to comment on that, obviously, but, you know, this would be obviously a huge feather in the cap for Daley politically, and for, of course, the whole Daley family.
Right. Thanks, Richard, for the call. I'm sorry, were you going on?
Oh, yes, and not to be too cynical, I mean, there are some people who are involved in bringing events to a city like the Olympic Games who are altruistic. I don't think that Pat Ryan in Chicago, for example, is a person who has any kind of cynical or self-serving motive. I think that there are people involved in movements such as this that are well-meaning and really think that it's going to benefit the city. Victor and I are in the business of looking at data and asking the question, well, what do data say about the ability of a hallmark event like the Olympics to bring riches to a community? And the data tell us that it's not likely to happen.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Chris from River Hills. Hi, Chris.
I wonder if you can tell me the formal economic language, the formal economic words to describe the following scenario. Suppose the Olympics in Chicago happen, and suppose the event does not cost the taxpayers a cent. It doesn't cost the government anything. There are going to be hotel bookings and tourist dollars in Illinois. Wouldn't necessarily a lot of that be at the expense of tourist dollars and hotel bookings in Minnesota and Wisconsin? What do we call this, sort of a finite sloshing around of entertainment dollars throughout the Midwest?
Yeah, so that we have actually two words for that. So one thing that could happen is that you have a bunch of Olympic visitors to Chicago instead of other visitors to Chicago. And we would call that the crowding out effect. So you might not end up with a whole lot more tourists, you just end up with different tourists. More to your point is what we call the substitution effect, where people are substituting one good for another. You can both do that within a city as people go to the Olympic Games instead of go to the Cubs or the White Sox, but you can also have that, of course, in between cities as well, as people spend their money. A Milwaukee sports fan spends their money going down to Chicago to watch Olympic Games rather than staying home and watching the Brewers, or someone in Minnesota spends their time going and doing that rather than other recreational activities in their own home state.
Mm-hmm. And there's another term that we use that I think is important here. If you were to consider the entire globe in terms of spending, it's really a zero-sum game. So If you've got people coming from Europe to observe the games in Chicago, less money is going to be spent in Europe, and that money that would have been spent in Europe is now going to be spent in the U.S. But if you were to add up spending over the entire planet, it's not going to change. And so it's really a zero-sum game when it comes to spending and the substitution effect. The larger the area that you consider would be more complete, the larger the area. And so I think that when Victor talks about the substitution effect, that's what he's referring to. So there's got to be some way, in order for the Olympics to benefit the planet, there's got to be some way in which spending overall would increase as a consequence of the games. And it's awfully hard to imagine a rationale where that would occur.
When you say the crowding out effect, I don't understand that. Who is crowding out whom? And is this tied to the finite number of hotel rooms in a given area?
Right. And I think if you consider Chicago, you're talking about an event that would be held at the height of the convention season, at the height of the tourist season. And so if you already have, let's say, hotel occupancy that's close to 100%, Victor's point is that you would have people from elsewhere in the world replacing people who would come to Chicago regardless. And so you can't have more than 100% hotel occupancy, so the devil's in the details on this. Really, what happens to hotel occupancy is a consequence of the games. I can also note that the evidence is pretty clear that about a month prior to the games, for the host city, economic activity falls, and that's because conventions and so forth anticipate rising prices for hotel rooms and restaurants and so forth, and so there's dead time prior to the games and dead time after the games because those who might otherwise come to the city shy away because they anticipate higher prices and reckon that into their decision-making, and so it's not unusual for conventions to avoid host cities for Hallmark events because they don't want to pay higher prices for hotel rooms and higher prices at restaurants and so forth and deal with the chaos and confusion that generally accompanies an event as large as the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that happened in Beijing. So the total number of visitors to Beijing in August of 2008, during the height of the Olympics, was essentially identical to the number of visitors to Beijing in August of the previous year. So you had tourists coming in for the Olympics, but all of the tourists there, as well as the security measures and all the other things, you had regular travelers, regular business travelers avoiding Beijing like the plague for a month, and so you ended up with essentially the same number of tourists to Beijing in the month of the Olympics as you did in the year before in the same month.
Thank you so much for your call, Chris. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-486-8655. As you know, this is coming up pretty soon. It's next week. The International Olympic Committee is announcing the host city for the Summer Olympic Games in 2016. Chicago is in the running for this, one of the four finalists, and First Lady Michelle Obama is going to be giving the closing argument for the bid by her hometown of Chicago, and that's coming up next week. Our guests have done a very interesting study of what's happened economically. Has hosting the Olympics benefited cities like Los Angeles, Atlanta, Salt Lake City? We've talked about Montreal and other places in the world that have hosted the Olympics, and their overall finding would be that it's not that big a boost for the economy. There are a lot of problems with hosting the Olympics, and so it doesn't turn out to be this economic boom for a city. So we're discussing all of that. What do you think? Should Chicago be awarded? You know, some of the events might spill over to the state of Wisconsin as well. And I'm wondering what you're thinking. Should we have the 2016 Olympics in Chicago. A couple lines are open. 800-486-8655 is the number. Our guests are Professor Robert Boddy. He's professor of economics and chair of the Department of Economics and Business at Lake Forest College. Professor Victor Matheson is associate professor, Department of Economics at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests this hour have written a paper bidding for the Olympics, Fool's Gold, and we're referencing that as we talk about Chicago and the 2016 Olympics. Gary from Cedar Lake is our next caller. Hello, Gary.
Yes, hi. I heard your guests talk about the Australia example where the city that got the games benefited and cities that did not benefit, but I see it differently here in Wisconsin in that if Chicago was awarded the games, that this would give a tremendous boost to the high-speed rail that's proposed, and I personally think that's the only way that high-speed rail would ever be built between Chicago, Milwaukee, and Madison. And so my theory, I guess you could call it, is that you would have three cities that would benefit from Chicago getting the games. Besides Chicago, Milwaukee, I feel, would definitely benefit, and Madison would benefit tremendously. And so I was wondering what that, if you looked at any other area where that has ever happened, where three cities in one region has benefited rather than not.
Well, this goes, of course, exactly to what Rob was talking about, saying that if you can parlay the Olympics into needed infrastructure investments, then you really could have a long-term economic benefit from the games. What an economist would, of course, say is that, well, if this high-speed rail is going to be so good for the region, why do you have to have an Olympics to give you the excuse to do these things? But, of course, there are sometimes these political realities that everyone thinks that this should be built but just can't get the political will to do it, and something like the Olympics is what makes it happen. And to that extent, maybe these games can actually lead to these long-run economic development.
Exactly. I lived in Chicago for 20 years, and I know how abysmal the local transit system is, what's called the elevated system. You had briefly talked about federal dollars that you talked about the local dollars that's coming from the city of Chicago, but the federal dollars, wouldn't they come in and aid the transportation system in Chicago, the local elevated system, and then wouldn't the federal dollars be allocated to build a high-speed rail system? And so besides having the long-term effects, which I think would be just tremendous for this part of Wisconsin, you would have the political will, the political powers to be, the local powers to be in each of these cities. I think that's the only way that they could ever be gotten together to bring about these benefits. I've traveled extensively in Europe, and I've ridden on the high-speed rail there, and I'm well aware of the benefits and what all these countries are doing to move ahead with their transportation systems, which we are not doing here in this country, and we're years behind these other countries. And so I see this as propelling not only Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, but really the Midwest as a whole would benefit from the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. And I can only echo what Victor said. I think he said it very well, that sure, you might be able to develop the political will necessary to push something like this through, and it takes something like the Olympics to something that people can really coalesce around. But if it really was that much of a, would provide that much of a boost, then can't we do it without the risk and costs that we associate with the Olympic Games? But I think the listener's quite right. I sometimes you just can't get these things done without having a reason, and the Olympics might be something that the cities that he's identified can rally around to get something done. But then you've got to look at things like Amtrak and so forth and ask the question, is it really possible that in the United States, what it is that we see in the way of high-speed trains and rail connecting center city to center city in Europe, whether that is something that could happen in the U.S. given the geographic challenges that and the culture that would really not allow for it in a way that Europeans allowed for it. But ultimately, it would be a question of, well, how much is it going to be used, and is there an economic payoff? And if there is, and we can develop data to support that, then why not do it without the risk and costs associated with the games? But I think your listener is making an excellent point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Gary, very much for the call. In your paper, you talk about it being in the collective interest of potential host cities to devise means to change the nature of the bidding process. Can you amplify on that?
Well, at least a couple ideas have been floated. One obvious idea is simply to have a host city that will host the games again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So, or at least make it such that you host games a couple years in a row. This way, at least the specialized infrastructure, like the water cube, like the bird's nest, gets used more than just for that 1-2 week period, that 1-3 week period, and gets another shot to get used in the future.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that Victor's spot on. I think that, and people have talked about, well, why not have the Olympics in Greece where it all originated? And why are we creating infrastructure that goes unused? Athens is a great case in point for that, where a number of facilities were built along the boardwalk, very valuable real estate on the Mediterranean, and stadiums that are now lying fallow. Nobody's using them. A lot of the private interests that said they would use them following the games have reneged on, if not contracts, certainly on oral agreements. And so do we really need to build this kind of infrastructure that's used so sparingly? And so there's dead time associated with stadiums, of course, and if you're talking about the Olympic Games, that dead time can be substantial. And why not develop a model that allows for the more intensive use of facilities that just don't blend well with urban economies? Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's been the challenge for all of us who work the Olympic Games, is to try to figure out how we blend this infrastructure, develop symbiotic relationships between sports venues and other sectors in a large, diverse urban economy.
Mark from Onalaska is next. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, good morning. My question is more to the community development side of things. And, you know, is there any effect on volunteerism and people opening up to other cultures? Did you look at any of that? And I don't know if that's a negative or a positive from the standpoint of the Olympics. And just a little thought here, if you could combine and make a water park bobsled run, maybe you could have a facility you could use year-round.
I would certainly, opening up the city to the world, as we've talked about, especially a great city like Chicago, it has a lot to offer that I think in some ways is overlooked. Obviously, they have their nickname, the Second City, and they take that a little personally, obviously. They think they have a lot to offer. Certainly, the fact that they only get 1 million international visitors versus 9 million in New York City certainly belies that fact. And opening up the city to volunteerism, again, there's lots of these positive spillovers that can occur from this event. But I would go back to the main issue here again, is that these are all sorts of things that make a city livable, make citizens happy. But certainly volunteerism is not something that tends to make cities rich, at least in direct economic terms.
I think Victor's point is very, very important. I volunteerism is a wonderful thing. And in fact, people do coalesce around events like the Olympics, and you develop relationships and a community spirit that is valuable. But again, if you were to compare the economic landscape before and after the Games, if volunteerism really transferred into something that is measurable, economically speaking, we would see it. We don't detect that. But I think it is important to note that there are issues here other than what it is that economists can identify in the way of a growth in real per capita income. It may be that people are happier, and it may be that they're proud, and it may be that they feel good as a consequence of the of hosting an event like the Games and have a sense of accomplishment. But you shouldn't argue the Games unnecessarily on the basis of what it is that it can do in terms of promoting measurable gains economically, but rather let's talk about quality of life, and then it's really psychic income that we're talking about here rather than something measurable like increases in real per capita income.
We're out of time, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being with us. A great show. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Our guest, Victor Matheson, professor, Department of Economics, College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, Worcester, and Professor Robert Blade, who is a professor of economics and chair of the department at Lake Forest College. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing this hour, and thanks to Rob as well for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until tomorrow.